The Z Train.
What's up, guys? Welcome to Birdwatch, a New Orleans Pelicans podcast powered by NOLA.com. I'm your host, Christian Clark, the Pelicans beat writer for NOLA.com, joined by Jeff Nowak, super producer. What's going on, man?
You know, just recovered from Mardi Gras, so I'm feeling pretty good. I'm feeling healthy. I haven't drank in a couple days. It's a good time.
Couple of days, huh? That counts as like months here.
Okay, you're new to Mardi Gras, all right? That's a normal thing to say on a, you know, 2 days after this madness. I'm feeling good. I'm feeling the flow. Yeah.
I got a little taste of Mardi Gras action on Saturday. Me and my fiance went out and experienced one of the parades. I don't know like all the names for the parades, which I guess sounds pretty blasphemous. but it was pretty fun. Couple claws, couple Bloody Marys. So I was into it, man. It was pretty wild, but it was one of the day ones, so it was pretty tame too. I feel like it was exactly my speed. I'm kind of afraid to go out in my neighborhood at night. And I'm not like a person who gets easily shook, but like, I don't know, it feels witchy, and I don't know. I mean, I'm just saying. I also saw
witches?
Like a 250-pound man in like a Britney Spears outfit too.
Yeah, Mardi Gras.
Yeah,
that's what you do.
you push the
boundaries.
So I was in L.A. On Mardi Gras Day, taking in Pelicans Lakers game. And my question for you is, if you could have one person do a pregame like hype up for your favorite team, who would you pick and why? Because I know my answer after going to L.A.
I mean, do they have to be like living?
It can be anybody.
This is a tough one. You know, I'm from the New England area. David Ortiz, I think, would be my guy. He would be my pick.
I think that's a pretty excellent answer, but my answer is definitely Ric Flair. I mean, Ric Flair taking the mic before that Lakers game was incredible. I was jacked up and ready to go. Like, I had juice to write on deadline that night, and he was there to fire up the Lakers. I mean, I want Ric Flair to give me, like, a speech every single morning as I go out into the world. I mean, I just had so much energy. Everyone was just jacked for that game when Ric Flair took the mic.
He can't get to that perfect woo pitch anymore.
Did you hear Shaq trying to do the Ric Flair, too?
It's not that he can't do the Ric Flair. He can't get his voice to go above, you know, the sound of a diesel engine. It's insane.
He's like, woo!
They had him try to, like, go from the bottom of his range to the top, and it was like, he never got, like... It was good. Shaq is a very interesting character.
Yeah, it kind of sounded like a pontoon boat trying to do the woo sound.
Yeah.
It didn't go well. But no, Tuesday's game I thought was a very fun game, very competitive. I thought, you know, the Lakers were obviously up for it, but I thought it was almost a compliment that LeBron, from the opening tip, you could just tell was like, no, I'm going to come out and really try this game. Because we know LeBron can, you know, go through a game at like 50% and still get his 28-8-8. But this was definitely an instance of LeBron being like, no, I'm going 95-100% tonight. I'm definitely going to expend some energy. And he had 40 points. It was a season high. The third quarter, I mean, you're just not going to win a game when LeBron has a third quarter like that. He just decided that the Lakers were going to win the game. He had 4 threes in that quarter. But I almost thought it was a compliment that like the Lakers took that game as seriously as they did.
Right, and I think you could probably look back at the other Pelicans games, or at least the first one in New Orleans, where LeBron took a backseat to Anthony Davis in the first half of that game. I think he hit a game-winning shot or a clutch shot at the end, but it was clearly like, we're going to run the offense through AD, I'm going to take a backseat, and then when I need to shift up to third gear, I'll do it. But yeah, that game was very much, we're not losing this game because my name is LeBron James. The best example that I can think of in like his entire career was game 6 in Boston when he was on the Heat. The Celtics were up 3-2. And you thought at that time, wow, LeBron might not be able to beat the Celtics with old man KG and old man Paul Pierce. And if you go back and you just watch the first 10 minutes of that game, just the look on LeBron's face, he was not going to lose that game. There was no way. And I remember watching it as a kid, rooting for the Celtics, being like, this isn't going to end well. And they got blown out in game 7 and it was over. But that's the type of thing LeBron can do. He conserves energy as well as anybody probably in NBA history. And there are times where he comes out and he's just, you know, the gloves are off. And that was what you saw in that game.
I think that LeBron, when he gets up for a game, is still unquestionably the best player in the NBA. Giannis, I think, is pretty clearly the best player over an 82-game regular season right now. But if I had to pick, like, one player just to play one game for my team or whatever, I would definitely pick LeBron. Alvin Gentry backed that up post-game. He said LeBron's still the best player in the world. I don't think that's particularly controversial. But I got a good laugh before the season when people were like, oh, is AD going to be the MVP? You know, LeBron's going to kind of let him take control. I got to laugh out of that, you know, one, just because of, like, AD is an incredible player, but he's not a guy who's, like, he doesn't dominate off the dribble. You know, you kind of got to throw it into him. I think, you know, what a lot of Pelicans fans will tell you, and this is accurate, is, like, he can't really carry you on offense just because he's not, like, a perimeter player. Like, he's got to be fed the ball in the post, kind of, and get his points that way. So, like, I thought, you know, that was reason number one. And also, two, it's freaking LeBron James. Like, LeBron James is never not going to be the best player in his team. I think in year 21, if LeBron is still doing it, he's still going to somehow be the best player in his team when it matters most.
Yeah, and he just affects the game in so many ways. You know, the funny thing you hear about LeBron is, like, oh, he's not the athlete he used to be, which is true. But so? He's an infinitely better basketball player now than he was when he was at the peak of his athleticism. And I think he's a better basketball player because he's not at the peak of his athleticism, because he's had to do things to, you know, account for the fact that, you know, his vertical leap, as, you know, Zion would put it, you know, I'm only at, like, what, 40 inches now instead of 45. So instead, what does LeBron do? Oh, he leads the league in assists. He's probably the best passer in the NBA, and he plays the forward position. Chris Paul is probably the best passer in the NBA, but LeBron's not far behind from the power forward position.
Both of those are incorrect. The best passer in the NBA is Nikola Jokic.
The most creative passer in the NBA. Okay. I'll give you that. You know, he does just the... It's just because he looks funny while he does it, I think. That's why people call him creative. But either way, LeBron's averaging 10.6 assists a game.
Yeah.
Think about that.
It's incredible.
He's the only player in the NBA averaging double-digit assists. And then he does things like, you're going to put Drew Holiday as the primary defender on me? Okay, I'm going to go to work. You know, you can't do this, and I'm going to show you why. And, you know, the Pelicans, I give them credit. They fought back. They went down by 14 points early, and they fought back, and they took a lead in the second quarter. They went down by 14 points in the third quarter. They fought back. I can't remember if they actually took a lead in the third quarter, but they were right there. And then, you know, it got away from them because the Lakers are a much better basketball team than the Pelicans. I don't think that's a controversial statement.
Yeah, it was pretty interesting, Drew Holiday guarding LeBron from jump street in that game. I mean, that was clearly the plan going in. It wasn't something they made an adjustment to on the fly. You know, I think Drew is an incredible perimeter defender. Obviously, he's had a lot of success, you know, guarding guys much bigger than him. We saw a game earlier this season against the Clippers when he guarded Paul George in the fourth quarter and completely shut him down. He stole the ball from PG like three times in the final 5 minutes of that game. So we've seen Drew have a lot of success guarding, you know, wings who are 6'6", 6'7", 6'8". But LeBron is obviously a unique animal, and he's just a little too big, a little too strong for Drew. Credit Drew for trying, but I think that Brandon Ingram has got to get to the point as a defender where the Pelicans at least feel confident, you know, him starting the game against LeBron.
Yeah, and I think the difficulty with LeBron and Drew in that matchup, Drew is a great defender on scorers. You know, he can shut down Damian Lillard. He can shut down Paul George, even though he's giving up size. You know, if LeBron's only going ahead and trying to score, Drew could probably hold up about as well as any guard, any two guard in the NBA. The difficulty is he has to play so many different things, and I just don't see, it's tough for him with that size deficiency to be able to account for all the ways that LeBron impacts the game. There was some criticism of, like, oh, why isn't Zion switching over and covering LeBron? You know, I think Zion is an incredible basketball player. He is not an incredible defender at this point in his career, and I think that if you want to see Zion on LeBron James in that game, you would come away very critical of the end result, in my opinion.
Yeah, I mean, Zion guarded Anthony Davis for most of that game, and I actually thought that he did a pretty good job. I believe Anthony shot 6 for 20 in that game, something like that. I don't have the box right in front of me, but I think that Zion is mostly fine when you ask him to guard in the post right now. I think where he struggles is out in the perimeter, moving his feet. I actually thought he did a pretty good job of guarding on the perimeter when he got switched against smaller, quicker players at Duke. I honestly think that he's going to get there, but I think this is a thing where he's heavier right now than he would like to be. He's still working his way back from missing half the season. But yes, you're absolutely right that that's, you know, probably the biggest weakness in his game right now is just sliding his feet side to side in the perimeter, and that I think that LeBron kind of would have made him look silly too. I mean, LeBron makes everyone look silly, but yeah, I mean, Zion was on Anthony Davis. I think that was the right move. He did a good job. And I thought this was a particularly fascinating matchup because the Lakers are freaking huge. I mean, their front court is LeBron, 6'8", Anthony Davis, 6'10", 6'11", and then JaVale McGee, 7 foot. And they also bring another 7-footer, 3-time Defensive Player of the Year, Dwight Howard, off the bench. Like, they can just throw body after body after body at you. And we've seen the two games this year where Zion Williamson has failed to shoot 50% or better from the floor are against those type of teams. The Milwaukee Bucks was the other one. They have Giannis, Brooke Lopez, the other Lopez brother, off the bench. Zion shot 8 for 18 in this game. He still made a big impact, mainly because he got to the free throw line 19 times. But I think my takeaway after seeing Zion against these like gargantuan front lines, these lines that are particularly equipped to guard a player like him who makes his living right at the rim, is he's going to keep playing his game no matter what. You know how what Russell Westbrook was asked the other game after like Rudy Gobert switched onto him, so does your strategy change or anything when Rudy Gobert switches onto you? Russ was like, no, I'm still going to drive it and try to take that, you know what, down his throat. That's Zion's strategy. You know, it doesn't matter how big his opponents are right now. He's still going to try to drive it down his throat. He's still going to hurt you on the offensive glass. And, you know, it's okay that he wasn't as effective as he normally is shooting the ball. He got to the free throw line 19 freaking times. I thought overall he was still good in this game.
Yeah, that was a career high for him. His next highest, he did twice. He against Portland, against Milwaukee, he got to the free throw line 14 times. So this game, he got to the free throw line 19 times. He made 13 of them. He was 13 for 17 at one point. The last two were very much tired misses in a game that was already lost. So you can kind of cut those out. I thought he was incredible from the free throw line. Anytime you make 13 free throws, I don't care how many you take, is a very good night from the free throw line. He went 8 for 18 from the field against Milwaukee. He went 5 for 19 from the field. Those are the only two games in his career thus far that he has shot under 50% from the field. And so, yeah, I mean, the obvious corollary there is these are both teams with a ton of height. And I don't see how, until he expands his game a little bit, I think that's going to be a trend that you continue with. He still had 29 points.
I think he
struggled.
Yeah.
I would say that this was a game that I thought he struggled in. He had some problems with turnovers. They only gave him 3. I don't know how that's possible. I thought in real time watching it, I would have pegged him at 5 or 6. What I'd want to see Zion do a little when he gets to the rim is, you know, vary how he does it. He's very formulaic in the way that he gathers like right in front of his hips and goes straight up to the rim. And in that game, I think if you asked LeBron, he would have told you that they game planned to strip the ball from him as he gathered right in front of his body. Dwight Howard had at least one. LeBron had at least 3 just slap down strips. Anthony Davis got him at least once. And that's something that like you look at it and you're like, okay, he's only played 13 games. So much of what he does is unrefined. And you don't really see it until he goes against a team like the Lakers, who are very stout inside, have a ton of height, have a ton of planned action to address what he's going to do. And you see, like, okay, he's not adjusting to that very well right now. But, like, that's honestly the scariest part about him is he's so unrefined and he's still putting down 29 points and you can't stop him.
Oh, I agree with you that he is pretty predictable right now. He almost always goes left. He can't really put the ball down with his right hand right now and attack right for a couple of dribbles. I don't think his handle is very tight right now, and I think that's something that he can definitely improve. I think he's pretty loose with it, especially when, you know, he's trying to make moves in traffic. He's really just like a 1 or 2 dribble guy right now. It's like 1 or 2 dribbles, I'm going to make my one hard move, and then I'm going to jump up. He doesn't have that many post moves. His post move is just to kind of jump over, around, and through right now. And you know what? All that said, it's pretty damn effective.
His post move is speed.
Yeah,
speed, I mean, and power. It's not even a move. What the Pelicans are doing, which I appreciate, is they're not posting him up. they're posting him up to space. They're saying, we're going to ISO you against Dwight Howard, and we're going to give you 4 feet to work with. So you don't have to do a post move. You get you close that space, and Dwight can't keep up with you, and you're going to go around him. You know, if you're Giannis on the post, you know, he's actually backing you down. It's really not what Zion is doing unless he has a size mismatch against, you know, a guard or a, you know, a small forward. But he's using that speed to his advantage, and I think that's smart. But you would like to see him build some more traditional post moves at some point.
I almost felt bad for Zion afterwards. There was a ridiculous amount of just media attention and coverage on this game. ESPN had a lot of their national people out there. And Zion talked at shoot-around. He talked after the game. And let me give you my best summary of what 70% of those questions were. So Zion, LeBron. And I could just tell Zion kind of getting worn down by like the sixth one of those after the game. There are, you know, easy, I guess, similarities to track. Both were number one picks. Both were heavily hyped guys since they were 16 years old. And, you know, Zion has obviously lived up to that height so far, 13 games in, much as LeBron did. But, yeah, man, I think, like, part of this for Zion is just I hope he doesn't just get worn down by all the media. I mean, just watching him in L.A., like, there was cameras on him everywhere he went. Like, he does his pregame warm-up. And by the way, he's not even like dunking that much in his pregame warm-up anymore, just because I almost feel like he doesn't want to like put on a show or just be like, I'm only this guy who dunks. But also, like, he's sitting there watching film with an assistant coach before the game. All these guys do that. And there's like an NBA cameraman 5 feet from his face while he's watching film. Like, this is the least cool thing he's going to do all day. Watch film before he goes back into the locker room to play the game. And he's got a camera held in his face. Like, just the media attention on him was pretty insane in LA. I almost kind of felt bad for him, but you know, this is just what comes with the territory when you're this good.
And this has been something he's dealt with since high school. You know, I mean, not to this extent. Not when you're in. I think when you're in LA, for any star player, it's going to be, you know, turned up to 11. But it's. I'm sure it's draining. You know, especially for a kid who I'm sure if you asked him, he knows that he's not at the level he wants to be. Although he looked like he had that 45-inch vertical leap back when he went up for that rebound against Dwight. I think he cleared. Dwight also jumped. Dwight, 6'11", like legit 6'11". And I always forget how gigantic he is until he's standing next to Derek Favors and makes Favors look like a toddler. But, like, he jumped. He cleared Dwight Howard's arm by, like, 4 feet. It was incredible. And just, you know, I think that if you ask Zion, he's like, he would tell you honestly that he's not. He doesn't feel like he's at the level he needs to be. And I think that's probably what frustrates him a lot when he's getting all these questions as if he's dominating these games. And there are things that he needs to work on. And he understands that. But he's not getting those questions. He's not getting the normal NBA questions. He's getting the, how does it feel to be the next big thing, you know? And I think that that's got to be a draining thing.
Yeah, and I think he really is such a team-focused player, too, that like he just doesn't love that every question is like, so Zion, you're so good at basketball, how are you so good at basketball? And really, I mean, he really is a team-oriented guy. He's not just like saying this stuff because he thinks it's going to sound good in the media. I'm telling you, he's about as genuine as you could be. My other favorite just random play in that game was where Zion took it right into Anthony Davis's mug, and he, like, his gather step, he traveled like 7, 8, 9 feet. It was legal, but like the distance he just covered on the gather step, it's like you should not be able to go that far doing that.
Right. And you can't push him off his spot because there was a report that I think Bill Simmons cited someone saying he's 300 pounds right now, which I don't know how accurate that is. He looks about the same as I remember seeing him in terms of just general bulk, but he's a massive human being. Even if he's 285, if he's 295, whatever he is, he's massive. And even like a guy like Anthony Davis, who's big, he just does not have the center of gravity that Zion has. And there were at least a few times in that game that he tried to back him down. He's like, you're not moving that guy. You got to shoot over that guy. But yeah, I mean, that game was tough. I think what you see in that game for that you don't see in a lot of others is a guy like Danny Green, you know, as much as I hate to talk about the Caruso, he was very good in that game.
Oh, he was excellent. It pains me to say it, but he's a really good player.
He's a good basketball player.
He's one of the best, reserve guards in the NBA.
He and Josh Hart have so many of the same characteristics, and the reason I think Josh Hart is so effective on the Pelicans is the same reason that Alex Caruso was effective on the Lakers. They never stop hustling. They do all the dirty work, and they can score when they need to. They can go downhill. You know, Alex Caruso set up LeBron on that Statue of Liberty dunk by throwing a pass between his legs. And then, but like Josh Hart got dunked on, right? Goes down the court and then breaks up a lob on the next possession. Like, he's just playing basketball. And they both do that. But the Lakers have so many of those guys. You know, even Dwight Howard, I don't think he had a great game, but when you play with LeBron, I think that there's just a rising tide effect. And it's very much like what happened with the Warriors the last few years, where you would have a guy like, you know, David West would just revitalize his career just by being in that environment. And it's very, very similar to what you see with LeBron's aura, you know. Even Markieff Morris is out there now. I fully expect him to hit a game-winning shot at some point, just because the buff he gets from being with LeBron.
Yeah, I felt bad for Josh Hart, who's done some excellent work these past few weeks. That clip of LeBron dunking was everywhere. LeBron even posted it on his own Instagram, and Rihanna even chimed in and the next day to say, can somebody check on Hart? So that was kind of cold, man. Rihanna, why'd you have to do my man Josh Hart like that, all right? Do you not see what he's been doing these past couple weeks?
He's working so hard. Even in that game, he didn't have a bad game, but like people are gonna remember that image. It's like when you play defense, sometimes you get in a poster. There's just nothing you can do. He could have got out of the way. He was guarding LeBron for a lot of that game. And when they started to come back in the second quarter, I think that you could give him credit for a lot of that, because he was taking it in his chest every time down the court. The same way Jrue Holiday did. But yeah, he's going to have a hard time forgetting that one.
All right, let's take a break. Afterwards, I want to talk to you about my new favorite comparison for Zion. Maybe we shouldn't compare him as much because he is one of one, but I like this a lot. We'll be right back on Birdwatch.
Scott was starting. Bowie was coming off the bench as Neal follows it almost and does bring down the entire backcourt. How strong is he? Well, I think this backcourt company will attest to it.
Miami is the new structure that they are rolling in. They are going to replace the entire structure because of the Shaq attack on the last rim.
Welcome back into Birdwatch, New Orleans Pelicans podcast powered by NOLA.com. We are on Apple. We are on Spotify. You can pretty much find us anywhere you get your podcasts. Leave us a review. Leave us a comment. And let us know what you think. I heard a lot of comparisons for Zion Williamson coming into this year. Paid particularly close attention to a couple of them. I liked what David Griffin said in that article at Sports Illustrated, that he was going to be Draymond Green with a jetpack, and that was kind of the PC version. He really said that he was going to be something similar to like Draymond Green with rockets in his butt. So that one was out there. I heard a little bulkier Charles Barkley a couple of times. I heard a little bulkier Sean Kemp a couple times. I guess it's always going to be a little bulkier version of X. I think that the best comparison for what Zion Williamson is 13 games into his career and at this stage of his career is a scrunched down version of Shaquille O'Neal. Jonathan Jarks of The Ringer wrote this article the other day titled "Zion Williamson is the NBA's closest thing to modern day Shaq." And I agree with that a lot after thinking about it, digging into the numbers. I'm going to hit you with this. When Shaquille O'Neal was a rookie, he averaged 23.4 points per game on 56% shooting. He shot close to 60% on free throws. Zion Williamson, through 13 games, 23.3 points on 57% shooting. He's shooting 62% on free throws.
Also, both number one picks.
Number one picks. I think that Zion is, in a lot of ways, just Shaq shrunk down to 6'6". I would be curious. I bet they weighed something similar when Shaq was a rookie. Shaq was a little thin as a rookie. He didn't have like the diesel girth until a little bit later in his career. But You know, right now Zion's shooting close to 9 out of 10 shots at the rim. You know, Shaq is always obviously a guy who lived at the rim like that. How do you just feel about that comparison?
Well, first, I have Shaq's LSU weight. He was an LSU Tiger, obviously. We should mention that. What do you think Shaq's weight was in Baton Rouge? Well, he's listed out on the LSU site.
I'll say, without looking, 255?
Low.
Oh, he was.
You are low.
Okay. Your guess is low. 275?
Nope.
More?
Yep.
Really?
294.
Holy crap.
That was his junior season.
Okay. I'm just wrong then.
Well, I mean, but...
he does look like pretty skinny when you go back and watch those rookie highlights.
Oh yeah, the skinny at 7'1" is a little different. And but I mean, even skinny, he's just, you know, you see a guy like Jackson Hayes, who he's got a frame where you're like, okay, he could get stronger, but he's never gonna be a bulky guy.
Yeah, Shaq was never a string bean.
Right, but like Shaq, skinny, he still, you could see him, he could easily gain 30 pounds and still be like in that frame. He wouldn't be fat. He wouldn't be out of shape. He would just be strong. Jackson Hayes doesn't have the physical ability to get to that little bulk. It's Anthony Davis, another good example. Whereas Zion, you see him and just the frame he has. It's like he carries 285 or whatever he is, like he belongs there. And that, and whether he does, whether you want to see him, you know, Shaq never jumped like Zion did. That's kind of how he bridges the gap, where he's got 6-7 inches to make up. And that's how he bridges it, by flying through the air. But I agree with the comparison in the sense that both of these guys, especially early, if you look at early Shaq, they both play like bullies. And I mean that in the most complimentary way possible. Like, they are just, they're going through you. They're not trying to finesse you for a bucket. They're trying to, you know, go through your chest, and you're going to feel it. If, you know, there might be an offensive foul, but you're going to regret taking it. You know, and that's what they have in common. I don't think that Zion will ever be as physically dominant as post player as Shaq was. Because, I mean, at 6'6", there's only so much you can do. The same way, like, LeBron is never going to be a center. You know, I think Zion's career will eventually see him become more of a swingman. But...
yeah, I agree with that. I mean, yeah, I mean, 5 inches is 5 inches, no matter what, you know, Zion has on check in terms of vertical leap or anything like that. It's interesting, too, if you look at the free throw attempts from the rookie season. Shaq was at 9 per game. Zion's at 8.7 right now. Already, Zion is kind of getting to the line like a young Shaq did. There have been two players in the history of the NBA to average more than 20 points per game as a rookie on 55% shooting from the floor. Shaq was number one, and Zion Williamson, if he's able to keep this up, is going to be number two. I think that's pretty remarkable. A lot of times when guys, you know, pull these stats, they, you know, make you hit really obscure benchmarks, or like, oh, you know, he's the only guy to have like 1,071 points and like, you know, 733 rebounds. Like, no, this is some pretty, you know, round numbers. That's a pretty freaking high bar to clear. And so far, Zion's the only guy besides rookie Shaq to do it.
And he's averaging, and it's on 14 shot attempts a game, which A, is a pretty high volume to be shooting that level, that percentage. But B, it's also a low volume to be averaging 23 points. If you look at the guy, if you go through the list of guys averaging 23 or more points, most of them are taking a lot more shots.
Yeah. I mean, I think in terms of just raw power, I mean, Zion's probably the most powerful player we've seen since Shaq, right?
I mean, who is there even to compare to in
modern
basketball?
Maybe like Miami Heat LeBron, but LeBron didn't have this kind of power, I don't think. Right before this podcast, you showed me a video of Shaq just completely taking down like the entire goal in the stanchion in a game. That's what I'm afraid Zion is going to do one of these games. I mean, I'm sure, you know, these baskets and stanchions itself are so much stronger than they used to be, but like there was three times in the first half I was sitting right behind the goal the Pelicans were shooting on at Staples Center, and it was just rattling for like 20-30 seconds. Like Zion would dunk and then it would rattle until the Pelicans were like coming down again with possession, and I feel like it would still be moving a little bit.
Yeah, and he did bend the rim at the All-Star game, whether he wants to admit it or not. It makes you wonder, like, you know, so Daryl Dawkins was another guy who used to smash rims constantly. Shaq used to smash rims constantly. They, like, forced rule changes and technology changes because it was dangerous. And you wonder, like, if if Zion was throwing down the dunks he's throwing down now at the weight he is, which like 285 as a young Shaq is like the same weight. Like 294 is 7'1" compared to 285 at 6'6". Would he be tearing down rims the way Shaq did? I don't know. I'd like to think so.
Yeah. I mean, tilting the entire like goal left at the Rising Stars game, that's something I didn't think I would see in modern day basketball. But man, I wish I could see Shaq unleashed in the modern game. Like, that's part of what Zion makes me crave, is like, there's all this talk about like, oh, the death of the post player. Like, what if you just threw Shaq into the modern game? Like, what would that look like? I would just love to see a team, you know, dump the ball into an elite post guy, you know, 25 times per game. I mean, we're getting a taste of that with Zion, I think.
Yeah, I mean, most of his action's coming in the paint. I actually talked to Shaq's former coach at LSU, Dale Brown, for a feature on Shaq's son, Sharif, who's transferring to LSU next year from UCLA. And I asked him if he'd followed Zion at all, and he said yes, but he said it in basically like his quote was, "I couldn't help but follow him," but it was very much a like, "I haven't actually been trying to follow Zion Williamson. I just can't watch sports without seeing him on my television." But I asked him if he followed Zion, because when I saw Zion bend the rim at the All-Star game, I was like, okay, this reminds me of Shaq. It's something that, you know, when you think of Shaq, you think of backboard destruction, which you can get fined for, by the way. I don't know if you realize that. They can charge you money if you smash the backboards. But I asked Dale Brown if he ever had to, like, have any conversations with Shaq when he was in Baton Rouge about, like, hey, man, can you not tear the backboard off the rim next time you dunk? That'd be great. Because we, like, have to spend, like, 20 minutes, and, like, we have to replace the entire goal, and, you know, it kind of ruins the flow. And he said that he never had to have any actual discussions with him, but he told me about a time that, you know, he was coaching, like, it was, like, an Olympic qualifier team, and Shaq went in for a dunk over Eric Montross, if you remember that name. He used to be a center for North Carolina. And he dunked so hard, he tore the rim off, basically, and the bolts on the rim, Dale Brown tells me, flew out like bullets to the free throw line. And he went and asked the engineer who designed the rim, like, what's going on? Like, what are these graded for? And the guy was like, he couldn't have broken the rim. And Dale Brown was like, want to bet? I was there. He said that they were graded for 2,500 pounds of pressure.
Oh, my Lord.
Like, that's a lot. And he was like, oh, they must have been defective. And I was like, there must be a lot of defective rims out there if that's what it takes. Because if you can go on, YouTube, and you can find just clip after clip after clip of Shaq just tearing down the rims. But yeah, I mean, it's something that, you know, you wonder someday if Zion is gonna, you know, end up getting in trouble with the NBA for smashing the rims. It kind of seems like it's only a matter of time.
So I saw a lot of discussion after this Lakers game in particular, of people saying like, oh, the Pelican spacing, you know, they really have struggled with their spacing in this Lakers game. And people pointed out that the numbers, you know, when Zion and Derek Favors were on the floor, were not very good offensively, but when it was just Zion and no Derek Favors, you had Melly to space the floor, they improved quite a bit. You know, I think it is an interesting discussion of just what type of big is best to put next to Zion Williamson going forward. I think that when you play, you know, the elite teams like this, and especially like big, huge teams like the Lakers, who can just like muck it up in the paint and kind of wall off the restricted area, that, you know, the Zion Favors combo might struggle in stretches. But I still think overall that it's difficult to do a whole lot better than Derek Favors next to Zion, at least at this point in his career. I mean, if you just look at the Pelicans starting lineup as a whole, it's played 13 games together. It's outscoring opponents by 19 points per 100 possessions. I mean, that's like the sixth best mark among lineups who've played at least 100 minutes together. So I get where people were coming from of saying that, yeah, you know, maybe Melly out there next to Zion is best in a matchup like this against just a team full of giants. But I don't know. I still really like Derek Favors as a player. I still like him a lot next to Zion Williamson. And I guess I would just caution people for thinking that it's going to be really easy to find a better player next to him.
Yeah, and I wouldn't make any broad-based decisions or, you know, assessments off of, like, wow, this didn't work against the Lakers. The Lakers are a very unique matchup. They're a very difficult matchup. You're basically deciding, you know, what's the best of these options that we know are not going to work the way we want them to. It's just, when you're playing a team with Anthony Davis and LeBron James, there's only so much you can do. I thought it was interesting that they went with Jahlil Okafor off the, they didn't play Jackson Hayes at all. He was a DNP. To the point that at halftime, I looked up on Twitter to be like, oh, is he hurt? He's like, no, he's just not playing. They put in Okafor, I think, because, you know, they'd like the size. He only played 4 minutes. I mean, they only had 28 minutes of a traditional center in this entire game.
Well, this was not a game for string beans.
Right.
Yeah. I mean, this is a grown man game. Just a lot of huge guys out there.
Yeah, and I thought Melly actually held up well when he was asked to guard those bigs. You know, even when Dwight Howard was in the game, that was, when they have Dwight Howard next to LeBron, that's a really tough matchup for a team that doesn't have a traditional center in there a lot of the time. And I thought they actually handled that well.
So I've had a lot of fun with Nicolò Melli, as you know. I got a real kick when the Pelicans official account retweeted a peanut butter Melli time meme. Thank you to whoever did that. But I got to say, even I've been a little surprised that Melli has been this effective pretty much since the calendar flipped to 2020. I mean, it's been almost 2 months of really solid play from him. And I think this is kind of an example of when guys are coming over from Europe, you gotta give them like a few months to acclimate a little bit. I've heard that, you know, the 3-point line, it's a little bit farther here, really is an adjustment for guys who kind of make their bones out there. You know, Melli is up near 39% now after, you know, he was below 30% as recently as early January. So he's shooting the heck out of the ball. And I think he is passable on the defensive end too. I've been impressed with that. I mean, earlier this year, he just looked overmatched. I mean, it was a lot of blow-bys. I was worried for him whenever he went up inside against somebody who was taking it at the rim. I no longer feel like that. You know, I think a lot of it is that he's just going to look a lot more effective next to Zion Williamson. But we saw him play a lot better before Zion was even back, too. Are you? I guess, surprised that Melli is this player, or is this kind of what you expected coming in?
Well, I had no idea what to expect coming in, and that's kind of the issue. Anytime you sign somebody out of, you know, straight out of, what was he, the Italian League or Euro League, I think. But, you know, I expected a lot more than what you saw early in the season. And because whenever you sign somebody, you get at least all the hype, and you only hear about the good things. You don't hear about the bad things until they start happening. But, you know, you saw flashes of, like, you know, he's a very intuitive basketball player. He moves to space very well. He had a really nice play in the first half when Kyle Kuzma just basically fell asleep, and he understood what he was seeing. He set a screen. He went to go space to the corner, and then no one was looking at him, and he just flashed to the rim and got an easy dunk at the end of a shot clock. And that's the type of thing that if you're a cerebral player, you can find those opportunities. Whereas if you don't really understand as well, you're going to have a hard time finding that space and creating those motions. So I think that you're seeing him get a lot more confident and get a lot more familiar with the offense and what his role is. And I think any time in the NBA you get comfortable in your role, you'll see improvement. The NBA is about repetition and confidence. And as you build confidence and you get those reps in, you're gonna look better. And he shot 50% from the field since the beginning of February, the entire month of February, which is over. There's a leap year, right? Over on Saturday, he shot 46% from 3-point range, on a pretty decent number, 5.2 attempts per game. Like that's great. You know, that's what you were looking for from him. And I'm happy for him. You know, it's always tough when you show up in a new league and you struggle, because you very easily wash out, because no one's taking ownership of you. No one's gonna fight for you because they haven't seen you in that environment. So it's really cool to see him. It was cool to see him in the Rising Stars game. It's cool to see him kind of burst out here.
Melli was an excellent player in the EuroLeague. In 2018, he had 28 points in one of the EuroLeague finals games. I give him a lot of credit for he's been upbeat. He's got his extra work in the weight room, getting shots up, even when he'd completely fallen out of the rotation. You know, he really is a professional through and through. I think he's very well liked within the locker room. And, you know, when you hear David Griffin talk about, like, we're trying to build a certain culture here, I think Melly fits in exactly with what they're trying to do. Like, they want guys who, you know, even when things might not be going their way, aren't going to complain. They're going to keep a good attitude. And Melly absolutely was like that. He's been like that the whole season, consistent, you know, just waiting his turn. And when it did come back around, he was ready.
Also, if you go on ESPN, it lists his hometown as Italy, which... I don't know much about Italy, but I know it's not a town.
Were you a geography major?
It's shaped like a boot, right? I always have to remind myself that he's Italian and not from Spain, because every time I see him play, I think he's like the long lost Gasol brother. He just, like, maybe it's the beard. It's just when I see him out there, just the way he kind of moves around, the way he always had the jump shot when he got to the NBA, but he reminds me a lot of Marc Gasol, just a little smaller.
I'm just a big fan of European players and the European game in general. Like, the European game, just like the way they pass and move without the ball, it does, like, I can see the influence from soccer almost. Like, they just understand how to fill the space, and it's not as much one-on-one basketball. I don't know. I think, you know how they say, like, soccer, oh, it's the beautiful game. I think a lot of them play the beautiful game.
I can't tell you, I've watched a ton of EuroLeague. But it is, I mean, I don't think it's a coincidence that you see these EuroLeague players show up and they're a lot more seasoned, they're a lot more mature. And yeah, I think he struggled to shoot when he first started. You brought that up, and I think that's been the biggest thing, because when he's not making those shots, his role in that offense doesn't make sense. He's there to be a spacer. And now that he's become a legitimate spacer, and he's putting up, he went 6-for-7 against the Warriors from three. You know, that changes that offense. That allows Zion that extra space to work off of a guy like Dwight Howard. It allows, you know, it allows more action to be run off the ball. So I think, you know, as you go down the stretch and you're trying to make the playoffs, I mean, he's going to be as important as anyone.
Yeah, all season long, the Pelicans have been in his ear. Anytime you're open, you need to shoot the ball. That's been, you know, probably the biggest thing that they're telling him. You just can't pass up open shots, because you're hurting the offense when you do that, really. Like, in the NBA, you know, the windows are just so small that, like, when you have that open three, if you're a capable shooter, you just have to take it. I think he's finally getting there. He's not being so hesitant. He's gotten used to that three, and it's been really fun, man. And it lets me get these peanut butter Melly time jokes off. It's really taking off.
Anytime you have a nickname, it makes watching you play so much more entertaining.
I need him to dress up like a banana for Halloween next year. Anybody out there who can help me make that happen, please tell them. The people need it.
I would say Mardi Gras, but yeah. And I think that you're pretty close. This is New Orleans. You dress up as a banana for Mardi Gras. It's in the season. Money.
I dress up as a Mardi Gras. Wow. I dressed up as a Mardi Gras. I dressed up as a banana for Halloween one time in high school.
I'm sure the costume's not that hard to come by.
Yeah, yeah. Who hasn't dressed up as a banana is what I want to know. I bet like 4 out of 10... males in their 20s have dressed up as a banana at some point.
But I think to make this work, he would have to dress up as a dog and a banana.
Oh, okay. That's too high. That's too much of an ask.
Too highfalutin. Yeah. It's too meta. All right.
What's the weirdest thing you've ever dressed up for Halloween, Jeff?
That was a cupcake once.
A cupcake?
Yeah, it said eat me.
Wow.
Yeah. I don't know if that's weird, but it's just, you know, very bro-like.
Okay, that's the image I'm going to leave you with today. Jeff dressed up as a cupcake that said, eat me. Appreciate you guys listening to Birdwatch this week. We'll be back next week with another episode.
Peace.